Hello, dear heart. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hello, beautiful humans. Now, this is an introduction I found quite hard because Renee, who I am having a conversation with today, and I have known each other since WonderCamp began. And I know her in many contexts and many frames and many ways. And we have evolved in through many personas and many people across the time. Renee is the director of COSHA, a health and leadership academy and impact consulting. Holistic mental health and social researcher, writer, coach and entrepreneur. She's an archaeologist and a writer. She wrote for The Rest Australian. And she's just a divine human being. She is the epitome of maturity. I am so inspired by her journey and how she applies her lessons to her life. I often think of Renee when I need inspiration because her way of holding and seeing and viewing the world and tearing it apart and putting it back together inspires me so deeply. So this is a conversation that Renee and I held in May 2020. So this was definitely at Ahui, a COVID time discussion where I was deep in the unravelings and processing of business. And I am so grateful that Renee accepted my invitation to explore business and our journey together. I really enjoy looking back to look forwards. It's something I'm really into. And there's not many people who I've known since the beginning who have been a part of it in so many ways. Renee's given me business advice. She has checked people in for sessions at festivals. She's read over and given feedback on my booklets. She was actually a part of some early calls about the podcast in 2020 and looking at how to support me to get it out. I talk about it a lot in this podcast, so I won't go into it too much, but when I began my business, I truly and deeply was wearing many masks of corporateness and doing things a certain way that I thought business needed to look like, even though I was trying to bring in spirit. And it was quite revolutionary for me at the time. And Renee's one of those people that met me there, that journeyed with me. I truly do believe that business is a spiritual path, and it is a path where we are asked to be seen, to step up, to look at our own weaknesses and gaps and communication issues, and anything you can think of, it will show up in your business. So let's explore.
We were in a mastermind together, and I think you were running the Woman in Social Enterprise at that time as well, which is how I connected with you. So we've had a real journey around business, spirituality and energy and all the things. And we've been talking a lot around our own business journey lately and the evolution of business and consciousness and how it evolves, and with the academic mindset and the framework mindset that I have, we're being both backing and forthing around the phases of business and how our relationship to business as self and business as an entity in its own right differs and moves as we grow as people, and it grows as its own practice or its own energy force. So that's what we're going to have a conversation today.
Thank you for collaborating and co-creating this space with me. I'm looking forward to diving in, because while our experiences have been different, our journeys have kind of gone parallel in terms of our own growth and evolution. And so we did talk about different phases that were hit along the way, and looking forward to exploring those.
Yeah, what do you want to share about you and your road with business?
Well, my career has been very non-linear, and I started out as an archaeologist and working in the cultural heritage space and working in consulting. That's primarily been my professional background, has been in a consulting context over the years, and then became more and more interested in community development and business as a model for change or a tool for change in creating bigger, better impact for communities, and got really interested in social enterprise. I started exploring that, and with my own journey ended up in that space and took a big career change and set up a charity. I've run my own consulting business for many years from my early mid-20s, and then set up a charity 2 years after I had my daughter. And then that's been a journey in the process too, and continued that consulting path as well. So my journey's evolved and my understanding of business has evolved, and I've launched into different aspects of myself along the way. And I've explored business in different arenas, personally and professionally, it's been a big, big process.
That's sort of been different for me in a way, in that sort of in the back of my head, I think I always thought I would be a business person, but I never actually went into doing it. But then I look at my journey and I'm like, oh, I was consulting from when I was in my mid-20s as well. Yet I would never have thought of that as a business. It was just like something I fell into. And then similarly with my business now, I sort of fell into that by being, I accidentally joined a business course, but I thought it was an art course. And that challenge was to create an offering. So that's how my now business sort of started, by accident. And I mean, I'm so grateful for that experience, but it was never on my mind, like, this is my goal, this is where I'm going. But I look back and I'm like, I was sort of always on that path. I was always being prepared for it. So.
It was a divine accident.
It was so weird. And even within that first offering, it was like, I was just putting out a, like, women's circles or something. And then from that, people just started asking me to coach them. So it evolved on its own. And that's been, for me, the evolution on each step in terms of responding. And I'm in a different phase now, but that's for a later discussion. But when you were talking, I really wanted to pinpoint within this discussion that, well, I see that our businesses are like these vehicles for our own personal development and our spiritual growth and our maturation and our evolution, in a way that I certainly didn't have when I was an employee, because you're fulfilling someone else's calling in their path. Yet when you're having to, at least in the way that we practice business, you're having to excavate that inner world and bring it out into the manifest, into the world, into the physical, and share it with others. There's a deeply personal aspect to it that it goes beyond sometimes what's discussed in the mainstream field.
Totally. It's personal, it's professional. Professional is political. Personal is political. Personal, spiritual. Professional, spiritual. It's all of the things. And I don't think you always get that richness of growth and opportunity to do that work. And it's not for everyone. It's certainly been the path that my soul has chosen to grow and evolve consciously and learn more about myself and the world. So it really is a vehicle through which we can express our own evolution. And it mirrors our journey too. We create it, and then what we create is a mirror of our own consciousness. So it throws back things at you and you think, oh gosh, I've got to look at that aspect of myself. It's not something necessarily that everyone wishes to dive into, but it's something that everyone can do.
I've had some interesting experiences lately talking with people who don't run their own businesses, whereas I'm usually used to being around people who do. And there's a lot of belief out there by people that our employees that it's easy, or you just offer this and it's this thing. Do you have anything to speak into that aspect of?
Oh my gosh. Business is a path that's easy. Definitely not. It can come naturally for some, but there's just so many layers to it. When you first start out, and Jimmy talked about this and the different stages of our own evolution in business, and when you start out, there's a lot of ego involved. So while you have this confidence that you think you can do things, there's so much to learn. There's so much that you actually don't know in a practical sense: finances, legals, structures, relationship management, employing staff, time management, all of those things. And then there's the parts of yourself where you're in a leadership role, if you are, well, in business, everyone is a leader in their own right anyway, but you're in a leadership role where other people are starting to look to you a bit more, and you're having to provide that guidance and support while you're trying to figure it out yourself, let alone having other things going on in your life. One note that I made that I wanted to mention is that business is never actually about business. Business is not business. Business is, it actually intersects with your life. It's like this expression of self. And it's bringing together all of those different components in a very practical, structural, strategic sense, as well as, you know, your like own personal development and your private life kind of comes into the picture too.
Yes.
Your feel about that and your...
I'm just thinking back to when I started. It was almost like I had to put on a persona.
Yeah.
Of that, like, fake confidence to just go. I mean, sometimes I was terrified, but I almost didn't let myself be. I feel like the persona that I initially put on was sort of corporate, because that was the framework I had for what business was, and which is an aspect of me. And I still feel I have that aspect, but it wasn't deeply and truly mean. A lot of what I was doing, even though I was like excavating this thing that wanted to be born through me and I was pulling it out and it was quite, I guess, spiritual, I was still enacting many tropes, you know, like still the spirit, some many of the spirituality tropes that weren't actually unique to me. And then also many of the business aspects, like trying to learn what you should do in business as well.
Yeah.
So in some ways, even though I was birthing this thing that was unique to me and from me, it was also had a shell of other people's expectations of what business was or what spirituality was. But that's also a necessary phase. When I said to you that framework, we're going to outline three today, the early business journey and the relationship between us and business, and then the middle phase where you're starting to look more at sustainability, and then the third, where you are starting to interact with your business is more about consciousness, at least what we've identified. I'm sure there's so many more and there's probably like sub phases within the phases. But in that early phase, I think it's necessary to almost put on the jackets and be that persona just to get it into the world, because that birthing process, right? And you need to be tough and you need to be tough. Well, I felt that I wouldn't have been able to express how I do now. I know that like I've integrated it.
I've
integrated those aspects. But at the time it was like, yeah, I was putting on new clothes. They weren't known tools or skills or aspects.
Totally. That's also the age we were at as well, you know, in our early mid-20s, and you're coming into this sense of self and who you are and how you fit in the world. And so you look externally to try and make sense.
Yeah.
And it's been a very masculine dominated arena, and a lot of those frameworks are shifting and needing to shift. And so we kind of look to those and think, well, that's worked, I'll just do that. And then you start going, hey, hang on, this doesn't fit anymore, or those clothes don't fit, or I call it the masks. I felt like I kept putting on all of these masks, and I've been in this delayering process, trying to actually strip all those masks off stages, pitching, and that's a bit of healing work that needed to take place as well. But that sense of like, my life wasn't that great behind the scenes, and this is where business is never business. It's all of your life, but you're needing to separate them. Your identity needs to be separated, and you need to be solid in your own life as well, to then to be able to show up and be solid in business. So yeah, the clothing or the de-robing and de-masking is something that we've both gone through. And that's kind of the middle stage of business that we talk about, where you start separating yourself and your identity. So much of my identity early on was tied to what I did. Who I was what I did, and my definition of success was that very mainstream kind of traditional, even somewhat patriarchal definition of success, about how you show up in the world and what you do. And that's not true, I've discovered.
I want to pull on that before we go on. Is when I was in my early 20s, I felt I would look at people who were like, say, 32, and I'd be like, oh my God, they've achieved so much. But what I achieved from that time to 32 was huge. So I just really want to share that with any younger people who are watching this, who are like beginning their journey. Don't compare yourself. Like, in that period of your life, like 3 or 4 years is phenomenal. Felt like, oh, there's not that much difference in our age, you know, then I've done all of that. But I've actually done a lot in those years. So there's definitely a maturation and evolution from your 20s to your 30s, even though it's not that many years difference in some ways, that what you can is so big.
I completely agree. And I think the mindset that I had in my 20s was the move fast and more. Gosh, this whole concept of achievement and success and failure is something that we've also spoken about. But you can achieve a lot in that time. It's just the way that I choose to work now is quite a bit different to then as well.
Did you feel then that you had achieved, like that you were successful? Like, looking back now, you might think that, but did you feel?
I was always waiting for the next thing. It was always in a consulting context, and the next tender, the next project, the next bid, and, you know, winning the next client, kind of moving from one to the other. And then I carried that mindset over into setting up the charity and the next partnership or the next funding win, or there were all these series of little wins within that, but I don't think I ever stopped and celebrated it at all. It was always next, until my soul led me on a journey that forced me to really stop. But that's a bit of a different story. Only now I'm starting to look back and actually own what I did. I don't think I owned it and celebrated it at all.
Well, I want to honour you and totally celebrate you. You did phenomenal.
I
saw it then, but it was also what we were all doing, like rushing, I think. And that group,
we were not well.
Yeah, we were all like, you know, we had that energy.
How do you feel about it? Do you feel that you?
I always knew that I'm a bit slower in terms of like I wanted to create something sustainable, but I was always a bit like, I was like, oh my God, you're doing amazing. So honoring you for that.
Thank you.
At the same time, in my own experience, I didn't ever really recognize what I was doing. I was always chasing the next thing in whatever capacity, whether that was in business or academics or be on this board or whatever thing. It was more about what you should do for me at that time. I think it was the beginning, maybe around when I started more into the WonderKind as a business, I did start questioning some of that stuff, but I still didn't like feel in my body successful. So I was sort of having some of those discussions, and I think I posted like a few blogs on LinkedIn about what does success mean or whatever, you know, it was like the LinkedIn blog stage. And so I was asking those questions, but I didn't feel that. Yeah, it's interesting to see, to look back as well.
I've actually really loved walking side by side with you in your WonderKind journey, and just seeing you totally step into spaces and lean into fear and lean into, you know, your own growth and development and continually support people and hold space. I know you think you're working on your own business and self throughout that. Same, so phenomenal and so special. So thank you for answering the call, because it takes a lot of courage to do that. So beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. Before we move to the next one, I did want to, I wrote down how I saw that first space. So I just want to tie that together for everyone who's listening, broken these down into the learnings that happened in a way. And so the first phase is learning about business. You're pretty much learning about traditional business, but also in the process, perhaps unconsciously, you are becoming that yourself is like, well, I was focused completely on business. And the potential blocks at that early phase that I see is just the self-worth of putting yourself out there and being seen for what you're going to step into, because it's probably something, at least if it's like a values-based business, whether that be social enterprise or spirituality or energy or whatever. I mean, everything we do is all those things anyway. But if you're placing one of those labels on it, probably is something that's been within your body wanting to be birthed for some time. And heeding that call can be scary, those bursts and the short steps of stepping into it. And then the ego part that I saw was that the sense of having to prove oneself for choosing that soul call over perhaps what you've traditionally.
Yeah, especially if it's been a little bit different to the society that you come from or grew up in, the cultural context, your family context.
The higher self aspect of that. So whenever we're in anything, we can tap into our ego or our higher self. The higher self who's sort of holding us within all that is that need to express your soul calling and your soul signature within the world outside of what you've been programmed with. And so I feel like that whole higher self is that unconscious that's pushing you to do that. That's present. So you can tap into either of those. Know that if you're tapping into your ego, that your higher self's also present for you to tap into.
Yes. Yes. I didn't know that early on.
Me.
It was more ego-centered for me initially, totally. The first phase was more ego, for sure.
The second phase that we talked about was, I'm sure it's different for everyone, but the business itself have become a little bit codependent. So like you were saying earlier, we're defining ourselves as business owners, and we maybe don't know part of the space between our personal lives and our business. So do you want to speak a little bit on that, moving into another thematic space from the startup phase?
This actually coincided with when I had my daughter, and the journey of mothering and parenthood really shifted my view of self and my own identity. And I went through an identity crisis because I'd attached so much of my worth and value to what I did in the world and who that meant, who I was in a professional context, because everyone you go to, they ask you what you do, and like that's the gold standard of who you are and what your contribution is, and it's not true. So I went through a process of figuring that out for myself, and then began the journey of, well, if I'm not that, my career pivoted. You know, I was no longer able to do the work I was necessarily doing in the past, going to remote desert locations and on surveys and walking country and spending weeks on archaeological projects. So I went through another inward journey, and my family experience started to come into the picture a lot more. I'd lost my mom only 2 years before I had my daughter, and I started thinking about, well, what really mattered was the consulting path, something that really was that important to me when my family had just been through this period of enormous grief and transformation, experiencing the loss of a loved one to mental health issue. And then my own mental health after having my daughter wasn't that great at all. Like, I had postnatal depression, and so I started thinking, and I was isolated at the time. I'd seen my mom was extremely isolated. I'd started questioning community and how we can come together and start actually addressing some of these issues. And so I set up the charity, and I lost my identity in it again, completely. I became my story because it was so personal to me, that journey, that it wasn't about my profession. It was about my family experience, my personal experience, how I could use that to create some kind of change. And so I went through early phase one again in the second venture, and then went on a health journey over the last few years. And that coincided with a very visceral, extended period of spiritual awakening as well. You know, not only did I practically go into that space and question and start exploring, it's like this deep internal itching inside of my being, like a fractured sense of, like, you're not doing it. You're not living your full potential. You're missing the very thing that you are. And I'd had my spirituality off to the side for most of the time. I never knew how I could fit it into my life, where it was always wanting to be expressed. And I was always wanting to talk about it, but felt that I couldn't. And that's, even, you know, that's a different conversation around the persecution and the sense of persecution in the spiritual arena and the healing space. So my extraction, I kind of went through it with the parenting journey, and then again with my own health journey and separating myself from those organizations. How did you explore or come into your phase two experience? What was that like for you?
For me, even though you said that the spiritual persecution of the mother story, I think for me that was my second phase, really and truly expressing myself fully in the way I needed to. So for me, it was around that I had sort of jumped into spiritual archetype for the running of my business. So that it was, and it was really compartmentalized as well. And I was struggling to combine the two, like spiritual and your business. So to enable that to take place, I jumped more into that role of being a healer. The problem with jumping into that role was that every time I had a personal issue in my life, and it was like it was shattered, right? You know, and then I felt like I was fake and that I couldn't serve my clients because I had owned that so much as who I was and who my business was and what I did, that the personal and the business was so intertwined. For me, I had a psychologist say to me, you know, like, this work we do was just a, and when she said that, it was so freeing to sort of see how I had owned it as my person, you know, my person, rather than that's a space I step into for that time. So at that period of time, that's what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And I needed to begin to extract myself from my business and see them as two different energetic entities that even though I'm still fueling a large part of that because I'm my own brand in many ways, but it's also allowed me to have a bit of separation between my personal life and my business life, while at the same time beginning to own and recognize the successes.
Yes.
So I go, my clients are achieving all this, but like I'm a failure. My coaching clients, it just doesn't make any sense, right? I've achieved all their goals, I've launched books, I've improved their relationships, like all the things.
Yes, I know that one. I'm flawed. Tara Brach is a psychologist and meditation teacher, and she calls it the mask of unworthiness, I think. Basically, it's in all of us. This sense of unworthiness, even though we can see that externally, we're actually supporting people to have this amazing transformation in their life.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of that success, at least for me, was starting to own pieces of the success. So we were saying earlier, I couldn't see it, or maybe I'd have a moment of yay, but that next phase, it was like taking a little bit longer.
Finally, let it sink in and take it on board. I wanted to ask you, do you feel that as you move through your own healing and self-exploration and your sense of personal boundaries have changed, that influenced your extraction or sense of being different from your business or a separate being, an entity to your business?
That's an interesting question. For me, like my view beliefs, our self-worth is our manifestation. So whatever level of self-worth we have is what we can create. There's lots of other components to that. It's so amazingly surprising how much I see that I would do a big healing process and then my business would have growth. They're so intertwined in that way. And
totally.
It's not always clear. Like, you're not always working on business when you have that breakthrough. It might be I'm doing some work with a love coach or something and then I have a breakthrough, but the impacts show up in my business. The self-worth is in the picture. And so I guess we need to move in and out of the compartmentalization and the merging.
It comes back to the feeling that I had and wanted to impress is that business is never business. It's just a label because you go through your own journey and evolution, your own consciousness development and the consciousness of your business shift.
The point to mention is another part of what makes business is receiving money for the exchange.
Yes.
And that's a measurable thing. So we also need to do work around the self-worth of that and extracting all the energy or programming we've placed on that to enable that flow to happen at the level where that doesn't define your creation or your business, yet it's happening in conjunction and allowing also a vehicle for the growth and the change and the shift.
Mm-hmm.
Like self-worth isn't measurable, but money is. So you can start.
And this comes down to the definition of success again, because it's the self-worth and the inner work that actually truly allows you to feel a sense of success and also living your purpose and living on purpose, which comes more to, I think, the phase three. For me, that's the definition of success, is to feel that sense of peace and wholeness and integration in my being and know that I've shown up and stepped into my calling and served as in my higher self for a higher purpose. And the financial component, because that's the world we live in, is a critical part of being able to do that. Absolutely. Then because the more that you make, the more you can serve. It's exponential.
But the second phase, it is a bit like you're starting to explore some of those concepts in a different way. When we're starting to play a bit with that sense of our business as a container, but we're not quite there. There's still things we're hitting up against. This is actually the phase, you know, they say businesses, I can't remember the number of years that businesses typically last, but it's around this phase, like six years or something.
Six years.
The hardest, because you're at that breakthrough point of you've set the foundations, but potentially you're not seeing that it manifested in the abundance quality quite yet in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so it's that phase of like, are you really in it? And
yes,
striving you in that time, that middle time, it's like, what are the foundations of what you've set up, and are they the right foundations, and in what way?
Mm-hmm. Feedback is important. That is the hardest part. The first 1 to 3 years, that's when most businesses fail, and then the next sort of 3 to 6 years is another little growth stage. I mean, you say fail, I think we need to redefine what that actually means as well.
True.
But it takes time to prove. It takes time to lay the foundation. It takes time to come into who you are and learn all of those things so that, you know, they become a part of you. Like you said, the very practical, but also the personal and spiritual, and how you want to show up and serve. The one point that I would impress on people, and this has definitely been my journey, the notion of success and failure is persistence is so key. My dad taught me this, and he said to me that the moment that you give up, you're usually one step away from succeeding. And the other thing that I want to impress is the difference between persisting and pushing against the grain.
Yeah.
My dad also called it blind ambition.
How would you say that people can tap into that if they don't know?
A lot of contemplation. Like, it is that inner work journey. It's knowing myself, getting to know who you are really well, and leaning into the fear and making decisions that might not always logically make sense, but there's a part of you that knows that's the direction you need to be going in. And it's better to make any decision, no decision. I would also say we all know, like we actually all innately know within us. It's just we've been so conditioned to not listen. Mm. And so it's a matter of actually just stilling your mind. If you've got children, if you've got family, if you're working full time, and you're also creating on this path of business yourself, it's actually carving out those spaces to really nourish and nurture your inner being, to be able to tap into it more and more, so it becomes more of the space that you navigate from, rather than it being that thing that you do outside of you. Mm-hmm. How would you say?
Because as you were talking, I feel as if it's changed across the times for me. Things that really align, like there's no question, is so synchronistic and it flows so naturally that you can't even, you're like, where did this come from? And I think that in business, at least, that's one sign that it's in alignment. When it's a bit in question, I'm shifting around how I'm thinking of that at the moment. Currently, after this time, I've had the opportunity to have a lot of contemplation. I'm now thinking if anything's in question, it's a no, which isn't how I've been operating, because I want that level of flow and clarity. That also requires a lot more excavation and the trust in receiving help from others and hearing how they perceive you, which definitely I wouldn't have been able to do in the first phase. I couldn't ask for feedback. It was like I just needed to get it out of me, and the feedback was just too hard to receive. At least now I'm moving more into taking the external but not owning the external. So allowing it to flow through. In that middle phase, I would say that was probably the hardest for me to really know, yeah, what was in alignment and what wasn't, because it goes beyond business at that phase. It sort of also goes into like, how do I organize my day? How do I want to spend my energy? Where do I want to invest the money that I have for my business? What areas? So many more questions that start to arise around what our higher self wants to express. It's a lot. I've said this to you before, but I see it energetically. It's like those kelp on the beach, the seaweed just all twisted that's laid up on the beach. That's a bit like that phase is like, okay, so I've got something going here. I've got interest and people want to engage with it, but like, how do I want to express it now? And it's like literally pulling out strand by strand by strand, trying to feel lighter and clearer in how you're expressing it, and know that it is divine rather than someone else's vision.
Yes, so phase one is very much about learning all the systems, learning all the things, the professional, figuring out just how to operate in the world, how you as a being operate. So it's all intertwined. Phase two is very much about, okay, now I've got that knowledge in me. I've got a sense of who I am in a way, which is more based on your profession. So then going, yes, you get to start questioning what your vision for your life is, and how are you recognizing that you have a choice in this, and that the traditional systems aren't always the right systems.
I'll read out what I read for this phase. But in that phase, it's seeking a sense of sustainability to operate in your business in an abundance model consciousness. So that it's not running on that fear or proving yourself or how will I survive. It's beginning to move into, okay, how do I want to be flourishing in my life while also providing the service? It's starting to move into that. The potential blocks are, for me, it was that abundance consciousness, the sense of proving the business. So still falling into proving myself a little bit. Then my ego, the seeking of that sustainability made me question if I could really do it. My higher self continues to hold that path and vision. Like, no, yeah, like you have to keep going. I feel like I haven't integrated the space completely, but what I'm hoping at least is that what I feel in my body and what I've had time to reflect on in this time of a break is that the business now becomes a container for all of it. So it's part of me, but it isn't. And it's also an expression of myself, and it's a serving of others, and it's a language of spirit. It's not so much my language anymore, but within that I can start to pattern my own desires outside of the language of spirit. That's how I'm feeling about it right now.
I've been coming into this sense of phase three myself, as we talked about. And for me, it is very much about an integrated self, my skills. And I've kind of, as I said, I've been through these identity shifts, parenting and profession and family and health and all of these things. So I actually come to the point where I tend to be all or nothing. So I think my life lesson is learning how to be actually, I say all or nothing, it's like one extreme or the other, and I tend to cut off. So it's like archaeology, that's what I used to do. Now I'm re-owning that part of myself and all of the skills that I learned through that, and weaving that into my business in ways that aren't always seen, and energy hearing work, weaving all of the energy stuff in a different way, and the coaching and the consulting, and then anything else that I've ever learned. So my sense of self is a whole being, and I come from that place of absolute divine guidance. I've still got the ego programs and cultural context, all of that, that we can't ever really shift. But I wake now every day, instead of, I used to have a bit of martyrdom energy actually, and like how, like, I'm here to do this thing. I felt it so deeply in me, but the energy of it was wrong. So now it's more present and still and in alignment with flow. And when I say I seek feedback, it's so I'm looking for the silent feedback, not the verbal feedback, but how, if I step in this direction, is it taking me somewhere? Yes, okay, I'll keep following that. If it's not, I don't push as much, and I let other people in too. So phase three is actually unlearning from the very beginning stage, but becoming into a sense of unification and actually being driven by a higher guidance, which is being curated over the last few years, and getting to know what that inner desire and expression is that wants to come through as a sovereign being.
That's so beautiful. I love that, like that silent messaging or the silent patterning and call, because one thing I feel really strongly is, like, even though we all know what our thing is, it's also quieter than the programming voices. Our deep inner knowing is quite subtle. And I think one of the beautiful pieces about this phase is that we're starting to know that voice a little more. We start to recognize the subtle is the right one. And we also recognize, even when challenges come up or blocks are happening, that we will get through them, we'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in the early phases, I didn't know that. No. When I would hit something, when I would hit an energetic glass ceiling, I would think that was the end of me. Or I would think I'll never come out of this. It will last forever. But over time, I also recognized that in the beginning, people couldn't see my vision. So they would question a lot of things from that traditional sense. So I was also open to a lot of programming. Whereas now in this phase, people can see my vision. So they back off that a little bit in terms of you should do this or you should do that, because they understand, because I've been able to articulate it better and do my own work around that. And so I feel more supported from my external world as well. That interplay allows me to flourish. And I wrote mana, the term mana, it's our inner power that we have, but that amplified when it's recognized by others.
Mm.
And I feel that in that early phase, we may not have the recognition to amplify it. So we have to just foster the inner flame and trust in that so deeply. And that is a really challenging piece of it. when no one can see your vision.
Yes. I completely agree. Our vision is actually our most powerful anchor, but it can also be a really lonely space to operate in, because it's making the invisible visible, and that only comes through time and through experience and through others experiencing your mana, your essence, your soul expression. So it's actually our vision is our most powerful asset.
Collective beings. We need our community, and often we're doing this work for our community. And so when they don't get it, it's like a stab, you know. It's like, what?
Actually, the phase three has been an amplification of your mana. I was reading your glossary this morning again, and that particularly stood out to me. I'm using your words. the co-reflective component of amplifying or embodying more of your mana, and then that flowing out into your community physically and energetically. That's really beautiful. That's very much what phase three is about.
And as you're speaking, it's also giving me some understanding, because I feel like when I was in phase two, I was actually quite resistant to the term of serving others. Like I've spoken to you about this before. My family was so giving, it was all about the other rather than about her nourishment. I sort of went the other direction of, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm the most important. And I still believe that. But the energetics have changed somewhat in terms of the way we can all benefit by giving and serving. Maybe I'm still not on board with that word, because it's not feeling like completely in alignment with me, but I'm all about empowerment of everyone. I do believe that, like, we can all empower each other together, but it's the fact that we're all rising.
Probably the word serve has got a historical component to it that needs to be rewritten, because in a higher sense and expression of the word, it's actually really beautiful. But I agree. I know how you experience that, and every time I've said service or serving, you're like, oh, shut away. I feel that call to be of service so strongly, but it's divine service. It's like deeply expressed self-nourishment, serving the self now in that divine sense to then take that externally.
I think I was trying to understand it in phase two, like I was trying to feel good about that, but now I can feel that it is more embodied, that it's genuinely overflowing. I'm genuinely wanting to, like, just give, whereas that wasn't so present before. It was more like, okay, here's your allocated time where I'm giving.
I've always experienced you as actually, I felt that abundance of receiving, so of you giving to me throughout, particularly the last few years, but since I've known you. So it's very interesting, because it's actually one of your absolute superpowers.
So I've got in this phase that the learning we're doing is to trust that all is in order. So even though we may be dropping some of the traditional aspects, we're learning still, but we're not taking it in the same way we maybe did in the earlier ways of this is how you should do it or this is how it has to be done. So we just have to trust that whatever we do will work, which is quite a learning experience. It's a muscle. Yeah. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I completely agree. And trusting that there's a higher plan, a higher path, anchoring to that, even if it doesn't make sense at the time, you don't get that confirmation or the feedback sometimes immediately comes quite a lot later. My sense of time scales has changed. You know, my urgency that I had before, the next, now fast, more immediate gratification has shifted. And I've noticed that I actually feel so much more peace and I allow myself to move in more universal harmony and working with actually organic time rhythms rather than these falsely created structures that we've put on ourselves, the 9 to 5 and then this week to that week. And if you don't achieve something within 6 months, then it means this. It's no, actually, this is a life's work. You know, if you are actually stepping into your calling and you're creating a purposeful, meaningful business around it, this is your life's work. So you can't rush your life. It doesn't mean that you can't take decisions that are quickly actionable, but you do anchor to that higher vision and knowing for the journey, not just for tomorrow.
As you were speaking, I remember that maybe it was like the third or fourth post I ever posted on Instagram. I said that I'm building a body of work. And it was that resistance to some of the messaging. So my higher self always knew that I was building a body of work, but my human self forgot sometimes. My human self would get caught up in that narrative of that masculine narrative of business, which I learn a lot from. I'm really grateful that teaching is there. And I feel like we wouldn't have so many business resources if some of those men weren't out there sharing 100%. The way that they do. And they've created phenomenal things. Anyone really, but specifically women, I think we do need to question our own cycles, our own moon cycles, our own energetic flows, how we want to use our energy, because energy is abundant and it can shift and change. And there's different forms of energy. There's like time and our money and what we want to create in the different pockets of those. But there's also the things that have to fit into all of those. So there's our family, there's our love life, there's our hobbies, if you have them. Your business isn't your hobby.
That
all these things require different pockets of energy. So just adhering to one narrative of what business is without taking into account the personal and energetic flow and the way that you want to express is doing yourself a disservice, I feel. But that is part of the learning journey and the consciousness evolution that we're all going through. And I guess we're talking about here today as well.
Yeah. Thank you. I also want to acknowledge actually the influence and support of men in the business arena. And there's some amazing people that I've had the privilege of working alongside in business, both in the consulting space, in the heritage space, in the charity, in not-for-profit, in social enterprise and the conscious business space. I think the learning for that is that it's asking us to integrate our own unhealed masculine and integrate our own unhealed feminine to phase 3. It's actually bringing both of those energies together in ourselves, so it's unified.
It's almost as though the first phase then is like masculine and the second phase is trying to be feminine. It was almost that swing. And then the third phase was like that, trying to integrate.
Yeah, so based on your own unique signature.
Even in terms of my own work, like men who have been willing to do coaching with me or step into the spiritual realm and be vulnerable has been really healing for me as a woman to receive that side of it as well, not just the power, the go, but to receive the vulnerability in terms of their own desire to evolve consciously. Has been really empowering, powerful for me to witness.
Yeah, because the world needs both. That's why both energies are crooned. Well, I want to ask you one question to wrap up. The question I want to ask you is, what does sovereign leadership mean to you, particularly in relation to business?
For me, sovereign leadership is dropping the programming of the world in every aspect. In business, it is that same thing. It's like expressing who you are in the masculine and the feminine, and in the passion and vibration that you need to express it. Because I think we're so programmed in ways we don't even realize. And I've certainly found that in this time, like things have come up I never would have even imagined that was running the way that I operate. And so we all had that. That's part of this human journey, is like shedding the things we've picked up that no longer serve us as a race across lifetimes and through our lineages, things we're carrying through our family lines, through our cultures. We've been programmed in so many different ways through our roles, through our choices, through our expectations. So those are all those like layers that are on top. And then sovereignty is our natural vibration that we are without those. And I don't know if as human beings we'll ever truly touch that. It's sort of like a goal we may not reach, but we get glimpses of it. We get those moments where we're like, oh, like we can just breathe because we know we're fully us. So I see sovereign leadership as demanding that of all of us, demanding that we step into that sphere of vibrating at that level, and that we know we can, we are that powerful, and that is that possible for us. Yes, you can have little rests where you binge on Netflix and whatever, eat chocolate. Like, we're still human as well. The higher space we're moving to with those integration of that is possible, and holding ourselves all to that is what you mean by sovereign leadership.
Do you have anything to say to that at all? I think that sovereign leadership needs to be the new normal, that it's entirely what our evolutionary journey is about, particularly at this point in time. It's so powerful, actually, as a narrative and as a sense of being, to be able to come into that sovereign space. It really is about integration and aligning more with our God self, our divine self, our deeper I, and leading from the space of compassion and honesty and transparency and courage and community. I think it's actually the next evolutionary phase for humanity, is to drop a lot of that, the lower ego programming, the lot of the I in service of the we, that you have to tap into your own deeper I, that your I am first, to be able to then understand fully how to lead in your own life, to then be able to lead and lead in community. For me, what I'm starting to come into the space of feeling is that true sovereign leadership is about supporting others as they rise in their own sovereignty. And we've spoken about this too. So I'm really feeling to hold space for people that are going on this journey, and then using all the tools that I have on my toolkit to be able to do that, and also share of myself probably more vulnerably in terms of my own personal journey around business and self-development and health and well-being.
Yeah. Two things were coming to mind as you were talking. Your mom was that everyone's really hungry for this. They may not know it, but they are like, when they get to touch that vulnerability, or when they get to touch that realness, there's like a sigh of relief because some of their masks start to shed, and they're like, oh, I don't have to hold these so tightly. So it is such a gift. Then the other aspect is also that it, in a way, it's like stepping away from being grassroots to almost just holding and supporting as a different energetic thing, doing or showing. I mean, it's still all that stuff, but it's different energetic in the way that the people become empowered, how we've talked about supporting others. So I think it's really beautiful to have this conversation and acknowledge that shift into that space, because I certainly feel that in my own journey, that there's been a shift in my role in terms of how I want to support, and the wisdom that I'm aware I hold now that I maybe wasn't aware of.
And I'd really invite anyone listen to just take little steps to practice sharing if you feel that you're in a bad mental health space. And it might not even be a mental health, it might just be that you aren't used to expressing sadness, or you're not used to expressing grief, or you're not used to expressing anger. Just start sharing little pieces, because that human angels will show up. Like, they're always around. And from this past, we can sometimes hold a lot of that inside and not share it. And it's scary to share, and it's not always received in the way we want it to be received. And no one can really fully ever understand us, and no one can really fully understand all the components that are fueling us. But the more, it's like building a muscle to talk as well, communicate. It's like learning a new way of communicating. In that way, I want to add to the sovereignty piece, that the sovereignty is also being yourself within the community, being yourself while others are also being powerful, moving power from a zero-sum power where I have power over you to I can be in my power while you're in my power, while you're in your power, which is my power, because together we amplify the mana of everyone.
Yeah, that can't happen unless we do have those moments where we are vulnerable.
Thank you. Thank you so much.